Hello, and welcome to the Podcast Motor Show. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. Here each week, we're going to bring on the best and brightest minds from podcasting for them to share exactly what's working with their shows right now. We're going to show you how to grow your listenership, build your online brand, and engage with your community more effectively. All right, let's jump into the show. All right, and welcome back. This week on the show, we have Andrew Connell. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing just fine, Craig. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Andrew and I had been talking inside of Podcast Hackers, our Facebook group, a bit about his show and a couple of things. Actually, I think we began our discussion around paid acquisition for podcasting, which I think is a really interesting topic that maybe we can dig into later. But Andrew, do you want to share with folks who might not be familiar with you and your podcast about you and kind of what you're up to with podcasting?
Sure. Sounds good. So I'm primarily a developer who got into the whole podcasting thing about three and a half years ago or so. Always big time listener of a bunch of shows, but a co-host or a friend of mine, we decided to stand up a show that covers the Microsoft. They call it the Microsoft Intelligent Cloud. It's their Microsoft Public Cloud, which is Azure, and their productivity suite called Office 365. So we focus on it primarily from a developer point of view. But we do mostly bunch of interviews, about 50-50 on interviews and news shows and a couple geek outs. We call it the Microsoft Cloud Show. Domain, same thing, find on iTunes and all that. So we've been doing weekly episodes now since October of, oh boy, I just blanked, maybe 2013. So we're up to, we recorded up to 185 this morning. So
wow, congratulations. That's some great staying power.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, and I took a jumping on the shoulders of giants and taking a cue from the whole make sure you publish on a regular cadence and all that. And it definitely makes a big difference. It's an interesting experience. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have a question before we get into some of the other topics, but wanted to talk about the mix of formats. I think most shows find to be one, maybe two formats. You know, it's a solo show or just an interview show, or you know, you and your co-host. It sounds like you guys have three pretty different focuses and formats. Can you talk about how kind of that's evolved and how you view it at this point, 180 something episodes into it?
Absolutely. It's funny because we actually talked about it this morning, and we're kind of looking at, you know, where we want to change here. So the geek out thing that I mentioned, I mean, that's the two of us are both big into auto racing and cars and stuff like that. So we don't, those are few and far between. I think we've done like three or four of those out of the 180. So I probably shouldn't have put those in the category. We really break down to try and do a good 50-50 mix between news and interviews. And almost all of our shows are, both of us are involved in it as a, not just a solo kind of run show. I really like the idea of a co-hosted show because I really like the interaction between each other. It seems like a lot of fun, and you, even when you're just doing a news kind of a show, our listeners enjoy, they like the interaction. But we started out just doing news and then started to pivot a little bit more and doing more around the interview bit. And we finally got we made a big mistake early on in not starting a mailing list where we couldn't really communicate with our listeners all that well. It's very hard to get people to, you know, leave a review inside something like iTunes. So we finally started an email list, and when we put out a survey for everyone, we found that people really enjoyed the news shows a lot more than we thought they did. Mm. As you know, other podcasters know, you kind of speak out, and it's like a blogger, right? You speak out into this vacuum, and you have no idea if anybody's listening or if anybody even cares. So it was nice to kind of see that, you know, people were resonating with the news shows and mixing them up with the interview shows. And we even fell into a little spot last year where we had a lot of interviews backed up. We started doing a bunch of interviews back to back and found that our listeners were kind of asking for like, hey, we come to you guys for the latest news and get caught up on stuff once a week. So, I mean, that's when are you guys going to jump back to that? So we had to, thankfully our listeners told us what they wanted, told us what they didn't, what they were missing. And we just now try to make it a 50-50 split between the two. There's so much stuff to talk about with what we cover that it's hard to fit it down because we try and time box down to about 40 to 50 minutes for every episode.
Sure. Well, and it's nice that you guys, a couple things. One, nice that you have the level of engagement with your audience for them to tell you what they want more or less of. I think that's, yeah, like you said, something that a lot of even successful podcasters might not have. But then even once you get that down into the two things, you're able to manage the content planning and strategy to where you can say, okay, it's time for a news episode, or it's time for an interview episode with an expert or something like that. I think that's it's a tough thing, and something that, like I said, even some successful podcasters have a tough time managing that balance.
It is. I mean, it is tricky to manage. I would love to have someone help us with the scheduling side of it, because we do it all ourselves. Mm. And we don't mix the show ourselves. We actually have someone that helps us mixing our shows. But we find that, I mean, like, case in point today, I mean, next week I'm going on vacation. We had an interview that we recorded a week or two ago. But we don't want to sit on the interviews for too long. We want to push them out, because then things become a little dated. And, you know, there's inevitably someone's going to say during the show yesterday or today. And, you know, when you publish it 3 weeks later, that doesn't mean as much. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to get those people scheduled and lined up the right way, and making sure that you've got enough things that you can kind of, you know, almost, you know, pull something out of the hopper. And if you need to be able to publish a show that, you know, something, either a recording failed or somebody wasn't able to make the show or something, that you can keep that consistent basis. So it's an ongoing bit, an ongoing challenge to keep it going. But it's one of those things that, you know, having the engagement with the listeners is what we get the most value out of it, or at least for the most part, that's one of the biggest aspects that we do it, is just, you go to a conference and someone comes up out of the blue you never met and say, "Hey, I love the show. Can I have a sticker?" It's like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah. No, I love that. I went to a conference a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, I had a couple of dozen people come and say, "I listen to your podcast every week. I love what you're doing. You know, it's nice to meet you in person. I feel like I'm on the podcast right now," or something. I was like, oh, that's, yeah. I'm like internet podcast famous in a very, very, very small way. It's kind of funny.
We call it a celebrity in a subculture. It just has to be a very small subculture, so it doesn't get too, you don't get your egos too big.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, yeah. So, Andrew, at this point, how many downloads are you guys getting per episode, like whatever, in the first 30 days or however you want to kind of quantify it?
Yeah, so we, and I'll actually get into this when we start talking a little bit more about advertisers, but I learned that, or we were told that advertisers or sponsors are interested in the number of downloads of your episodes 6 weeks post publication. So our numbers are around 3,000 downloads for each show that comes out over the 6 weeks after it's been published.
Gotcha.
So that's about, I guess, what is that, like about, I don't know, 40 or 50 days, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we get it's a pretty good loyal listener base. It's a steady kind of incline. I guess the thing that you and I first started talking about in the Facebook group was we've been able to generate some revenue from the show. And I mean, we don't get, I guess it's a good thing and a bad thing. As a developer, I always want to hear negative feedback, because that's the part that you can always improve on. Good feedback is nice, but it doesn't really help you.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of really good feedback from people, but we don't get much negative feedback. And so I'm always trying to figure out, you know, how can I reach out to other people to let them know about our show, to grow our listener base? And it's we're looking at all these different options, and the whole concept of, you know, doing paid acquisitions with normal online businesses is really simple but relatively speaking, it's simple to figure out and to measure. But with a podcast, it's like billboard advertising. You can't really tell, you know, the direct correlation for, you know, this ad spend or this kind of getting your message out, how it actually translates to people showing up and downloading the show, which is that's the important part.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the Art of Manliness show, I don't know if you listen to it. It's a fantastic podcast. I know they do some paid acquisition, and I'm sure it's Facebook ads. And the one thing I've heard that's a really kind of handy trick looking at tracking those quote conversions is if you go all the way back to like how your podcast affects your business, which is kind of the end goal of, you know, what you're looking for, is having a URL that you send people to that you only mention in the podcast and you don't link to in the show notes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us, it'd be podcastmotor.com/show or whatever it is. We don't have it in the show notes or anyway. So anyone who comes to that page, you know that that they listen to the podcast itself. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's someone who listens to the show and quote converts, but looking at like finding a true metric of conversion, anyone who lands on that page, then you would know, you know, was a conversion. Yeah. It's tough though, right?
It is. It is. Because, I mean, I know that it's, you always look at, you know, I think the first time when you try and do something like that, you think about what is your behavior? What is your behavior going to be with something like this? And then if I, you know, you mentioned that podcast just a minute ago, I'm the kind of person that's not going to go to a website. I'm going to go pull up, you know, Overcast on my phone, and I'm going to do a search for it and subscribe that way. And of course, you know, that doesn't help with the conversion. So I look at it and say, well, I, you know, having a landing page that people can go hit that's only put either through that specific, you know, ad that you put on Facebook or something, that's a, you know, fantastic way to click through and to see it. And it's for the people who look at it and say, oh, I heard about the show, you know, it's always tough to capture all those things. And as a developer, I have the I guess the flaw is, and at least in this case, it's a flaw to where if I can't capture all the data, then I see it as like, you know, is that a good approach? When, you know, if I'm getting most of the data, that's probably good enough. But the developer side of me is too black and white on it.
Sure. No, I paid acquisition is a very slippery slope for your checkbook. I mean, you can go spending a bunch of money on whether it's AdWords or Facebook or whatever. And especially with a podcast, I mean, seeing the increase in listenership over a 6-week period or something, you could have spent several thousand dollars. So yeah, I don't, at least today here in March 2017, it's not something that's very well understood at scale, I don't think.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's definitely something that somebody has got some idea on how they could crack this nut, kind of like how Medium was with publishing. And I think that, you know, it'd be really interesting for someone to, you know, quote unquote, reimagine how to figure that out with podcasting. But somebody's got a smarter mind than me on it, and I'll just keep trying to play around with it a little bit and try and figure out here and there how to figure it out.
For sure. Yeah. Cool. So 3,000 plus downloads in that first 6-week period that advertisers look for, and you guys have attracted some advertisers, in the past year or so. Can you talk through a little bit of that process? Because one of the biggest questions that we get within the Facebook group and at Podcast Motor in general is, yeah, I want to start a podcast because I want to make money by podcasting, or I want to, you know, make the podcast be kind of a break-even event for my business where, you know, I paid for a service like Podcast Motor, editing services or hosting and all these kind of things that go into podcasting. People want to make some money back from it directly by advertising or product placement. But the question comes, like, how do I align the advertiser with the brand of the podcast and my listenership and being true to that and the things that they're interested in and they want. So this is a lot of questions all in one, but I think it really is a mindset and a framework that sounds like you guys navigated pretty well. So I'd love to kind of hear how you walked through that journey and maybe some people who are listening can kind of walk in your shoes as well.
Sure. So I'll start out with, I think one of the things that I think is the hardest about this is when you are a show that has a general kind of a approach. And it's just like any kind of a product. When your market is absolutely huge, it's hard to figure out, it's hard to target that market. So mm-hmm. for us, you know, we're called the Microsoft Cloud Show. We talk about Azure and Office 365, developers and IT pros. Well, there are the easiest thing for us was to go find the different conferences that are put on throughout the year, look at the sponsors of those shows, and then identify and say, okay, well, here's a handful of people that we can go target and say, would you be interested? We ran the show from October of 2013, and then starting sometime in 2015, we started mentioning on the show that we were looking for a sponsor. And but we weren't doing any specific outreach for it. We talked to a few people, but no one wanted to be the first one. And we had a company out of the blue where one of their employees listened to us, mentioned it, and they came in and started they asked if we'd be interested in sponsoring. We had no idea what to charge. We threw a number out there. They didn't come back at us at all. They just sent us a check. So of course we didn't charge enough.
Right.
but we had that one sponsor for a few months. They're actually still a sponsor of ours. But they jumped on in January or February of 2016. And last year, a couple months after that, I went to a conference, MicroConf out in Las Vegas. And I met up with a few other podcasters, a few of them were successful had some pretty good revenue coming in from advertisers. And I learned about the whole, you know, you want to look for number of downloads over 6 weeks. That's going to tell you what your CPM is. Then you charge based on that's your multiple. So you have a dollar amount times your CPM is going to give you how much each episode costs. And then you know, figure out what your offering is to your different sponsors. So finally, I had a way to kind of measure stuff. And I was like, okay, well, this is now that we figured this out, what we really need to do is grow our base, get better numbers so that we can actually have a pitch. We have a front and back piece of paper that we hand potential sponsors and say, you know, here's some demographics about our user base. The things that we learned after we started doing this that I wish I knew beforehand were, I wish that I'd had a, you know, they talk about an avatar or an idea of who your listener is. We didn't have that. We knew who it was, but we didn't have any number. It was just a feel. So I wish that we had started from the very first day. I wish we had started a mailing list and got people to, when they signed up for the mailing list, like we do now, we send them a survey to ask them to kind of self-select themselves. They can be anonymous. They can give us their email address. It doesn't matter. But we want to know who they really are. For us, developer, IT pro, business user, stuff like that. What kind of a person are they? And that was able, we were able to take that information and then go to other companies to see if they would be interested. We put a couple of rules around it in place. So going back, finding the companies, finding potential sponsors was the easy part. Going to all these different conferences, or at least just finding the conferences, looking at this at the page that had a list of all the sponsor or all the exhibitors, writing those down, and then we found someone on Upwork that went and found the marketing contact for each one of those different sponsors, filled it out in a spreadsheet, and then we just sent a mass of about, I think, 100 or 200 emails out and just said, here's our prospectus. And we did it in a staged approach, but we said, here's our prospectus. Here's what we charge. Here's what you get in return for it. Here's how many episodes you have to buy. Are you interested? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people came back. We've had a handful of people that came. I say a lot. Out of maybe those 100 people that we reached out to, I'd say 25 came back to us. And that was I was pretty happy with that response. Of that, we had serious conversations with about 10 of them. And we go back and forth between a couple of them now who end up being our sponsors here and there. The big thing was really the communication and sharing the stats with our listeners, or sorry, with our sponsors from our listener base for specific episodes, for specific topics, to really kind of to help them better understand our listener base. Mm. The one thing that we have stayed away from, and that's primarily because of the overhead that it would cause, is selling sponsorships for specific episodes. We essentially say we have a normal episode that we do. It's either a news or an episode or an interview show that's 40, 45 minutes long. And you buy a contiguous subscription or contiguous sponsorship to those. We're not going to give them the choice of saying, well, I want to be in this episode or I want to be in that episode. And that never worked. We lived for most of 2016. I'm sorry, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit on this, but we lived for most of 2016 with just one sponsor, and we had a pretty epic guest that we were able to land that we've been working on for about 2 years that we were able to interview in November of 2016. And once we had that confirmed, I reached out to about 10 to 15 sponsors and said, here's the deal. The next episode has this person on it. We're going to have up to 3 sponsors. Here's how much it costs to be, and you have to do 12 episodes. And that got the interest really going. Landing a big guest or a big name was a big deal, because since we've done that, we've had people that have, you know, they it's almost like it legitimized us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them started coming back towards us and saying, you know, now I'm interested, or put me on the list for, you know, the next batch that comes up. And we've only had of when we did that one, we had one that did not, that one big guest, we only had one of the sponsors has not renewed with us, and the other two are still with us. And we're going back and forth between a couple different ones. We've had a couple. It's funny, like right now we're sitting on, we've received checks from 3 other sponsors, 2 or 3 other sponsors, but we haven't gotten the information that we needed from them to be able to put them on the show, to either, you know, play their recording or for us to say their, you know, to call them out on the show or put them on the website. So now we have a new challenge, which is trying to get them to fulfill what they've already paid for so that we could sell additional sponsorships to other people.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand where you're coming from there. I have to peel back a couple things in what you said. Talking about selling packages and not letting sponsors buy a certain episode quote. How did you structure, tell kind of what you charged, but you sold for X dollars for 3 episodes or 5 episodes. How did you go about that kind of decision-making process?
Very selfishly, to be honest.
Okay.
Between my co-host and I, we kind of split the work, and then we have a producer that we'll send the files to. We send him a text file, or we fill out a Google form that he gets, and we get an MP3 back from him. And then we have someone who helps us go through and publish the show every week. What we didn't want to do is that we didn't want to sell, like, say, 2 sponsorships here, and then 2 episode spots here. Or 2 episodes there. So we would be going through a big churn. We only want to have to go through onboarding a new sponsor every couple months or every other month.
Mm-hmm.
So we initially started selling sponsorships. We figured out what that CPM number was. So that was the first step, which is how many subscribers do we have download the show? Or sorry, I shouldn't say subscribers. How many people download and listen to the show over the course of the 6 weeks after a show has been produced or published? So we looked at looked at the average numbers, and we were sitting around 3,000. So that's going to be a CPM. That's 3.0. Figured out a number, talked to a couple people and said, what's the right number for a podcast? And we were told that our very first one that we just kind of threw a number out was $45 per CPM. Advertisement spot on one episode would be 3.0 CPM times $45. So 3 times 45 is 1 episode.
Mm-hmm.
What we did is we took that number and we then said, all right, we're going to sell sponsorships in batches of 4 episodes. And so it's either 4, 8, 12, all the way up to 20. But we put an incentive in, and that is if a sponsor bought 12 episodes, or I think it was 12, then we gave them a special episode that we would interview them. They would give us the questions and we would interview them. But we would treat it as a normal episode with no other advertisement spots in that episode. It would be published out of our normal band that we normally do. We usually publish on Tuesdays. So whenever it was ready on a weekday, we would just go ahead and publish it. It was essentially an advertisement show for them, but yeah. It was more of an interview-based show. So they didn't end up paying for that show. None of the other sponsors paid for it.
It's like sponsored content in the blogging world.
Exactly. It was just like that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't tell our listeners that that's what it is, but we call it a sponsor feature something like that. I can't remember the exact name we use. Since we started doing that, and we see that a couple of our sponsors, they didn't want to have to deal with like paying for, 4 episodes. We do a weekly publication, so they didn't want to have to deal with this every month. We've since now said that we only end up selling 12 at a time. So that's every 3 months we can go through sponsors. And we are now talking about doing a discount if they buy up to like 20 or 24 or something. But
so you have the same sponsor for every episode for 3 months in a row, or can you have multiple in there that you're alternating between?
Good question. So we have 3 sponsors that we run at any given time, but we don't have more than 3 active sponsors at a time. So those 3 sponsors, if you buy in at episode 50, then you're going to be 50 through 62. With any exceptions, if we do like a geek out or if we do like a really short episode where we interview people for like 5 minutes at a conference, we don't put sponsors in there because it just starts to kind of muddy it up. So we just say, if it's a real content show, you buy 12 episodes, that's 50 through 62. Another sponsor could come in at say episode 55 and they go 55 through 67. So you have a contiguous 12 episodes and we do a max of 3 sponsors per show. We do 1 spot. That comes in right after our introduction of the show. 1 spot that if it's an interview show, we'll do 1 right before we do the interview, and then 1 right in the middle of the interview. If it's a news show, then we try and space those other 2 out somewhere in between when we go through our opening banter and then jump into the news about halfway through the news.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're only down to two sponsors at the time, like we are right now, because we're trying to chase down some details from some of these other sponsors that have paid, but they haven't given us their logo or the text they want us to read out, then we just cut it down. We just kind of do the exact same thing. We just say, instead of three spots, we're just putting two spots in.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. The other question I had about kind of how you identified your audience is, I know you said building an email list is the thing you wish you would have done earlier. When you actually went back to build that kind of demographic avatar, as you put it, of exactly who your listeners are, what kind of approach and tools did you use to go into that and say, all right, we need to build a really clear picture of who our ideal or our sample listener is, to then present to your potential sponsors?
So what we did, we thought we had a great idea, and then we heard what somebody else did, and we ditched our idea and we stole their idea. So I shouldn't say we stole it. We imitated what they did. So we flattered them by imitation.
and iterated on it, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, what we did was we actually were one of my co-host who had just co-founded a company. He's a CTO of a company that just got founded. He was asked to be on another show, that was looking for sponsors, and this is a fairly big name show. And so then right after they did the interview, he got pitched to, does your company want to advertise with us? And so he went through and he asked, well, let me see what you guys do and let's see what kind of stuff you guys give potential sponsors. Maybe that'll help us. And what we saw there, they talked to a similar audience that we talked to. And so we saw the demographic breakdown of what they were looking for. And it essentially told us, you need to ask questions to get the same kind of data from your listeners. And that's when we had the big slap in the face of, oh, we should have started a mailing list, because how do we get people that are listening to us? How do we get them to come back and actually send us, you know, to answer these questions? And quite frankly, the reason why I say I regret it is that we are still struggling to get people to convert from our being subscribers of the podcast to being also subscribers of our mailing list. So what we did was we just created a simple Google form, asked a bunch of questions. Tried to keep it fairly short, but we also tried to get things of not just who they are, but kind of what their behavior was. And I think one of the most eye-opening ones that we got, two of the most eye-opening questions that we asked people, and I can actually, I'm happy to share this form with you, too, if you'd like, if you want to put it in show notes.
Sure, that'd be great.
Is that we asked them, how do they listen to the show? We gave them a couple options between working out, commuting, or when they're at their desk or something like that, or an other, and we gave them a free form thing. And then we also asked them, I just blanked what the other one was. There was two of them. Oh, shoot. Anyway, right. So it's the big one is how they listen to the show. That was the really, really, and why they listened to the show. What was interesting to them? So we gave them a few things, and when they would submit one of their entries, we also gave them a way to, when they would submit it, other people could see what they had submitted. So people could, you know, say yes, plus one on what that other guy said.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot that, you know, the majority of our show, of our listeners, they listen to us when they're in the car on the way or on the train on the way to work or on the way home. That actually explains a lot of why people aren't subscribing to the email list, because they probably forgotten about the fact they were listening to our show when they can actually do something about it to go subscribe to an email list. So that was one. The other thing was just finding out why they listened. And like I said at the beginning, you know, between the interview shows, the news shows, the one that we were really surprised at is that people saying, you know, finding out what, my name's Andrew Connell. I go by AC. My co-host is Chris Johnson. He goes by CJ. And they just responded with, we just want to find out, you know, the things that AC and CJ are working on. We're trying to stay up to date because you guys seem to be working on the interesting stuff. So yeah. That's when we're like, well, let's do the geek out stuff and let's talk about space as well sometimes, because people said, you know, we don't work on it, but, you know, let's see if they are interested in that. And sure enough, that played off really well too. So it was mainly just a Google form. That was the big thing. Right now we're playing with the idea of using some of our proceeds from the sponsors to create like a monthly giveaway that we give our listeners that are on the mailing list to try and entice more people to get on that list. Because we found that sponsors were very interested in our mailing list as well and getting in our normal mailings we send out.
That was my next question, is how do you incentivize listeners to join the email list? Because it's not, you know, hey, sign up to, and we'll let you know when a new episode comes out, because everyone is subscribed and Overcast on their iPhone. It just downloads automatically. You got to have some sort of hook to get people to get off the couch or get off the treadmill and go sign up, right?
Yeah. And so what we did, and we're actually going to change this up. This is deliberate. And so our listeners are probably going to, if we have a cross pollination of listeners to your podcast, to this one and to ours, I might get a couple angry people here, but who are hearing behind the scenes bit. But what we did is we take, because we talk about the news, we have a lot of links that we reference in our show. And so we put all the show notes, not only in the notes of the episode, so they get them in Overcast. But we also send them out via email the same time the show gets published, about 5 minutes after the show gets published on our feed. What we plan on doing is we plan on removing the links from the actual show notes and just keeping the description there, and then keeping the links either on our website or in the or just in the email. And now we're doing that, and it sounds like, you know, it's kind of a trick that we're playing on them. But one of the reasons we're doing it is actually in response to a lot of feedback we got, which is people would listen to the show, and we started getting questions coming back saying, "Hey, in this a couple of episodes ago, you guys talked about this one thing. I can't remember exactly what it was or what the link was. You know, could you share that link with us?" And we're like, "That's not nearly enough information to figure out what you just asked for." So what we started doing is we told them, I said, "Hey, if you subscribe to our show, then even though you're going to be getting the show, you know, automatically downloaded in your phone, you're also going to get an email on the same day that you can easily delete if you don't want it. But it'll also have all of the links that we talked about in the show notes, during the show, so that you've got it right in your inbox. You don't have to worry about trying to write something down or take a note when you hear us talking about it. If we reference something in the show, we will include a link in the show. So the two of us take turns as we're recording a show. We have links that we know we're going to talk about, but if one of us says something during the show, we send the other person a note so that when the other person starts talking, I can grab the link and put it in our shared notes to put it in the show notes when we're finished."
Yeah.
So that's a big thing that we do that our listeners do like, is that they get all the notes of the show in an email at the same time they download the show, they get it right in the email. The other one is that we're going to do some sort of a fun little giveaway for the show that we haven't figured out what it's going to be, but something that's maybe a monthly kind of a little contest that we do, pick somebody at random if they've for people who are on the mailing list, and just promote that on the show. So we know that we can get up to 3,000 people because that's how many downloads we're getting. We know that we can get up to 3,000 people on our mailing list, and we're just trying to get that number bigger and to get that number to convert to actually sign up to the mailing list. And it's primarily just to be able to reach more people and to talk to them. It's not, you know, we talked about at the beginning, you know, trying to make money off the show. We had grand visions of being able to, you know, to make this a five-figure monthly recurring revenue business. And what we're finding is that, you know, maybe that can happen, but that's why we were looking at paid acquisition. We have a great, you know, we have a great audience, and we're just trying to grow that audience more. And it's to get that audience to grow bigger, to be able to charge more for our sponsorships, or not just raise our rates, but be able to get more revenue from that increased CPM. We're finding it to be a lot harder to make this, to make it a revenue stream that can be, that is as big as what we've heard other people do.
Yeah.
Right now we're making plenty of money, where we've paid all of our costs back for the 3 years we've done it. We've been able to upgrade our hardware on both sides. Just got ourselves a nice Zoom H6 this past week. And we also have a good, healthy bank account that we're sitting on that we can use to be able to do certain things with. It's not going to be enough to be able to pay the mortgage and stuff like that for 6 months or 12 months. But it's enough to be able to at least make it a business that you can pay attention to, and you can invest more time in, and try and use the revenue we've pulled in to level up the show and to attract more sponsors and more listeners.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. I mean, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of the right things. I think building the community around your show is something we talk about a lot, and you guys are doing that through your email list and incentivizing and giving people a real, honest reason to join your email list, and you're providing a lot of value to them through that list, not just you know, hey, here's our stuff and here's, you know, a place where we can have sponsored segments or whatever. But, you know, here are the links for every episode in your inbox. You don't have to go to the website and search and what episode was it. Yeah, I think sounds like you guys are doing a lot of things the right way. And yeah, filling the top of that funnel with more listeners is the only key now. And all I can say is it sounds to me like more of those big guests are going to be the way to not only increase what you charge per sponsor segment, but to increase your listenership too. I think it's a double whammy.
Yeah. And that's the way we've approached it too, or that's the way we're looking at it as well. We did have one other thing that we were able to, this was a big kind of lucking out kind of a thing that I have to say is, I know that this isn't available to a lot of people. It wasn't available to us until late last year, and we really lucked out on it. But Microsoft held a conference last year called Ignite. It's about 20, 25,000 people show up. And they were doing a little podcasting thing at the show. And then what they did is they called them an alternative influencer is what they were calling people. And they offered to live stream a video version of our show for free. We just had to have a place to be able to host it. So, I mean, they just gave us a little snippet HTML. We just created a new page on our site, threw it up and told our listeners, hey, go here at this day and this time, and you'll see us broadcast a live show. And oh yeah, by the way, we're gonna record it and we'll be able to publish it as a regular episode. We did that live show. It got a really good response from our viewers, our listeners. I guess they were viewers as well.
Right, just that time.
Yeah, just that time. And we saw a nice little bump in our subscriber base when that happened. There was a lot of buzz around the social sides, around Facebook and Twitter. And we've since been offered or invited to go do that at a few other shows, not just Microsoft shows, but a couple other shows as alternative media from the traditional people that normally would cover these different conferences. And we found that we're trying to take advantage of that a little bit more because it really gives you a little bit more of an angle of kind of, you know, when someone like when the Super Bowl is going on and you have the reporters walking around on media day and kind of catching people that you don't normally get to catch and do a decent interview with. I mean, it's surprising how effective that really was. The challenge with that one is you've got to somehow get to the conference. It's been a great way for us to go to conferences for free. At least the registration part is free. And then you just got to pay your way there. But we're getting, you know, great content out of that. So our sponsors end up, you know, paying for us sometimes to go there and to highlight some of the stuff they're doing at the conferences. So that's another angle that we're looking at being able to take advantage of.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that's probably an underutilized one. Every business or every industry has their conferences, and developers, it's pretty easy to find, but I think everybody can identify with, you know, a couple of conferences they can go to a year, and conferences are great. If you spend the time to be real intentional, Adam, and not just go to, you know, to party or to mess around, they are a great way to grow your brand and your business and everything and your network, which is ultimately where all this stuff happens, I think. So
yeah, it does. It just create great conversations, great buzz. And yeah, it's funny because when we were doing the interviews too, we had our stickers there, and you'd have people that would walk up in the middle of an interview that would, you know, hey, can I grab a sticker? I'm like, we're in the middle of an interview right now.
Come on, man.
So we actually had somebody, you know, one of our friends stood there and was just handing out stickers to people that were coming up and like, what are you guys doing? Like, oh, we're, you know, interview for the Microsoft Cloud. She goes, oh, I've heard about that. It's like, here's a sticker. Just go look for that domain that you see on the sticker. Go there, subscribe. And it worked. So we got some plans to try some new things, try and do interviews, some video based interviews that maybe posting to a YouTube channel or on Vimeo or Wistia or something, and to publish the audio side, but have the video side there as well to try and just attract more people to try and pay attention to it. And just trying a couple of different things like that. It's been for both of us. I think that we're starting to treat the show more as, hey, it'd be great for it to be able to be self-sufficient and generate some revenue that maybe pays for some really cool opportunities for us to level up the show. But I think we're both starting to instead leverage the show for our primary lines of business that each one of us does, to sharing kind of what we do, what we're interested in, and just kind of have a chance to sell the different things that we're working on. For me, I do video-based training. For him, he has a software, a SaaS that he that he sells. And so it's a talking about those a little bit on our show. They still talk straight to our audience. So kind of co-opting the show for our own advertising, being our own sponsors as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Andrew, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right. I really, really impressed with what you guys have done with the show, and thank you very much for sharing everything you've learned along the way, especially about advertising and really kind of building that base to present to advertisers. I think it's super, super useful, and I think a lot of people will get a lot out of listening to this episode. Can you share where folks can kind of find out more about you and your podcast and connect with you online?
Absolutely. Yeah. So these are really easy to find. To find our podcast, it's the Microsoft Cloud Show, which is MicrosoftCloudShow.com or MS Cloud Show on Twitter. For me, it's Andrew Connell, both AndrewConnell.com and Andrew Connell on Twitter, just the full name at Andrew Connell. Those are the two primary ways you find me. I also do a video-based training business that is called Voitanos that you can find with the exact same spelling. Sounds like exactly like it's spelled, or just go to my site. And you'll see links to it on Twitter and Facebook and the main website as well. So that's the best way to find us. And I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on your show. I've been recently discovered it the last few months. So it's been really enjoyed listening to the show, and flattering to be able to come on and share some of our experiences with your listeners.
Awesome. It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Podcast Motor Show. If you're enjoying the show, head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. I'd love to hear what you think. And as always, head on over to podcastmotor.com for more great resources on how you can become a better podcaster. We'll see you next time.